Indra being here. So I would like to, from the last lecture, so this is mostly on elliptic inverse problems, but about to somehow make draw the conclusion with the connections with the yesterday's lecture. I was also asked that when we were considering this, I say a few things about last hour lecture. We are considering hyperbolic equations and defined, so this was in M times R plus, and we defined the boundary map, that map, the Dirichlet data to Robin data. Then there was a question that I was asked after lecture about what one does after the reconstruction of the manifold and the metric. So when this M and G are given, we can look this type of domain of the influences. I take here point Y1. Look this domain of the influence. Take point Y2, look other domain of the influence, and get this type of intersection of the domain of the influences. So here was set I. And now we were able to find inner products of the waves and also Gram matrices. So one actually is able to, using that information, to consider, so here is this function UF, XT multiplied with characteristic function of this kind of slice of domain of the influence, and consider inner products of any kind of waves. So basically the possibility to compute inner products of the waves with some basis, and possibility to construct matrices of projectors in this basis, says that this is determined by the boundary data. And now if we divide this by the volume of this set I, and let these sets I's go to point x0, so we shrink this, now we know the metric, so we can control the set I, we shrink it to singular point, this limit is equal to the value of the wave squared. So it is. This is just we cut the function to the domain of this small set I, compute this inner product, normalize over the volume, so approximately we get this value. And now when, if this is not zero, we can solve from the first equation there Q of x0, to be this minus, we can compute also the second derivative of this, that so we can compute this for all t's, and we can compute this for, so basically this means that we know u of f at arbitrary x0, arbitrary time, up to a sign. So then we can use the equation to solve what the potential Q is. And then when Q is given, we can compute what the wave UFs compute this Robin data and actually solve again from the equation what sigma is. So this gives us Q of X, and we can also check by substituting it to our boundary measurements, we can compute what this unknown function sigma is. So that somehow was end of this, like this somehow finalized the construction we did last time. Okay, now there is important to notice that if we have, here we have a manifold, and we have measurements with only with T is less than T capital, then actually similar technique that we used, it can be used to make reconstruction locally near the boundary in the T distance T over 2, so that phase basically can go in and return to the boundary. Okay. So that is why this kind of principle could be also used with infinite manifold. So if the manifold would not be compact, but there would be like manifold with boundary that is goes to infinity, we could still construct the metric and the potential Q by, because we, who knows, I mean, if this interior here stays here or if it goes to infinity. Finite time measurements don't tell us if the manifold is finite or infinite. Okay. What has happened here? Something. Okay. Now we are going to look inverse problems for elliptic problems and compare this with invisibility cloaking examples. And unless I mention differently, all these are done together with Greenleaf and Jaroslav Kurilev and Günther Ullmann. So I'm speaking about now inverse problems. For instance, inverse problems for Maxwell equations mean the question, does the electromagnetic measurements on the boundary of the body determine what is inside? So it's very similar to this type of reconstructions that we have done to this one. Then invisibility cloaking is a special kind of counterexample for for inverse problem. Namely, we assume that we have an arbitrary body. Then we coat it with some exotic material and would like to obtain an object that would appear the same as homogeneous space, like air. For electromagnetism or vacuum. And then we are also going to, somehow this is a general principle how to do this kind of invisibility cloaking examples, and we can apply that for creating all kind of constructions, for instance, like use so-called wormhole devices, but I will explain how to somehow make metamaterial objects that function as invisible tunnels. So this is the outline. First I will speak about inverse connectivity problem and the general principle of transformation optics. Then this requires, for more exotic constructions, require exotic material. So I'm going to speak about metamaterials, how they work. Then return back to the inverse connectivity problem and create there, and also in other physical systems, perfect invisibility cloaks. And then we look applications for this. Let me recall some things from the inverse conductivity problem, and now also because we are interested in what can be physically be done, let's concentrate also on physics. So if we have a body in two or three dimensional case, we are not interested in higher dimensions, even though nowadays there are even proposals for space-time cloaks, but for electromagnetism, that are time independent, let's assume that the dimension is at least 3. Okay. Now the voltage here give rise to current. So we have the gradient of the voltage and multiply it with conductivity. So it is actually Ohm's law. When we think that, so we have wave changes in voltages, if I denote it by V, it is gradient of U. I multiply it with conductivity, that is 1 over resistivity. And result is current, J, often denoted in elementary electromagnetism with I. So this is Ohm's law, that voltage difference is R times current. The conductivity equation, it takes place if there are no interior sources of current in the body, is that the divergence of the current is zero, so there are no sources of the current in the body. And this is basically the Kirchhoff law, we sum all currents that come to a single point. Now we use two types of different type of matrices, sigma, to model conductivity, isotropic ones that are scalar valued, and isotropic ones that are matrix valued. Okay. If we say that what is the boundary voltage, then we obtain a boundary value problem for conductivity equation. And I recall here this Dirichlet to Neumann, that is actually the voltage to current map, that maps the boundary voltage to boundary current. And we consider also the corresponding quadratic form associated to this Dirichlet to Neumann operator. So, by using integration by part, one sees that one can use the solution of this equation with different boundary values, f and h, to write this in this form. And this has an important consequence. I think it was first observed in inverse problems by Argyll, that if we somehow consider now this as that we have two same boundary values, f here, here is actually here is like voltage difference times current. So this is the power. This is called Joule power. So actually this quadratic form associated to Dirichlet to Neumann map, this measures the power that is needed to keep the voltage F on the boundary. So this is a very physical object. So now let's look at unnatural conductivities. Important thing for us that they cause non-uniqueness, but we can formulate the problem invariantly, and the invariant formulation in non-Euclidean space causes non-uniqueness results for the inverse problem. So first, why we are interested in anisotropic media? Biological tissue is anisotropic. You actually get anisotropy when you take isotropic materials and make like layers or laminates on this. So if you put like conducting material with isolating material and repeat this structure, you get a structure where the currents go very easily in this direction because it goes through the conducting structures. So these are conducting structures. So current is very little resistance in this direction, but this direction it must go through these isolating areas. So the resistivity is very strong. So the resistivity now varies in the direction that we are considering. So this picture, oops, is on human bone in different scales. It just has different type of layers. Especially muscles are very anisotropic. But this means now that first that so natural materials are very anisotropic. And also, if we can construct by concrete construction where we somehow put layers, anisotropic materials. So to understand which materials are related now to deformations of the domain. And now, in the beginning, I will start with, as we consider now anisotropic matrix values due to conductivities, and I will consider smooth diffeomorphisms. Morphisms. So here we have a domain that we deformed by a diffeomorphism, and we also have here some function u, and here u tilde. This is a systematic way how I use notations. And so they are just this is u is a composition of u tilde and f. So let's now return back to this Dirichlet to Neumann map. So like I said, this quadratic form associated to Dirichlet to Neumann mapping, it physically is associated to the power needed to maintain the boundary condition. So if I put the voltage f on the boundary, this is the power that I need to do that. And this is now a very physical object. It's not related to mathematical models that I use. You can really go and measure it in all physical objects. So, because of this, there was this observation, originally associated to Luch-Tartar, which says that we can change coordinates. We can basically write some physical model in different coordinates. And if we change coordinates, here is the transformation rule how the conductivity changes. And often people speak about conductivity tensor, but actually, this conductivity is determinant of the metric to power 1/2 times metric to power jk, so it is actually tensor times a half density. So that's what conductivity tensor actually is. Okay, now we have this observation that this quadratic form here is actually a physical quantity. It's the power needed to keep the boundary voltage here. So if I change the coordinates, this doesn't change. So if I somehow now write conduct model in two different coordinates, I have here conductivity sigma, here this push-forward conductivity, f star sigma, defined in this way, then this quantity is invariant. And you can obtain this also just by taking this formula and applying chain rule and change of coordinates in integration. So somehow if you want to have a mathematical proof, but physically, you can just say that this is physically observable quantity, so it is the same. Because these forms are the same, this in particular now implies that the corresponding operators, Dirichlet Neumann mappings, are same. Also for the minimizers, so this, if I consider this minimizers of this functions u, with for which this needed power is minimal, nature always looks for minimal use of power, we see that it satisfies the conductivity equation, and the previous consideration implies that if I have changed the coordinates, this u tilde, that is composition of u and the diffeomorphism, satisfies the conductivity equation with this conductivity tensor. Now, this observation and this formula, they are the basis of transformation optics. Like I said during my first lecture, this now says that there are, if I have conductivity f star sigma, this push-forward conductivity, and sigma, the boundary measurements are the same for this. And this has now two interpretations. This is how we think often in mathematics, that if you have a given physical model, we write it in different coordinates. So any physical model can be written in different physical coordinate systems. But also this has the other interpretation, that if you consider that this is a physical conductivity in Euclidean space, and sigma is other conductivity in physical space, then when we fix the coordinate system, we can say that we have two physical models for which all boundary measurements coincide. So in other words, we have here somehow this diffeomorphism that changes things. We can think that we keep the physical model of the chain the same and change the coordinates that we use, or we can think that we keep the coordinate system same and change the physical object. And this was somehow, for mathematicians this is not so surprising, but physicists were very interested on this, and they call this the principle of transformation optics. So how do you use this? Here is an like example of kind of engineering task. Let's assume that we have an optical cable and we want to put it inside some device. So we would like to, it might be that the device is such that it has very small hole. We should somehow put the large cable through an extremely small hole. So then we can actually take like this type of piece of optical cable, take a diffeomorphism that maps this domain to domain like this. Here we put empty space. So here G is Euclidean. Here we have F star G metric here. And in the boundary measurements, this object and this object now work the same. So even though we have changed this structure of the cable a lot, in engineering this looks like a cable that would be a straight line. So, like a plane wave that propagates in this waveguide, this optical cable, it goes through this area as if this would be straight tube. And all these type of engineering constructions are possible to this interpretation of this this previous formula. It's just your imagination that limits what you work to do with this. Okay, but here everything was very, very usual. All materials are pretty standardized. But to make some strange constructions, now we have to look for more exotic materials, the metamaterials. So metamaterials are actually, now they are materials that are defined that the geometry of the structure is more important than the components you use to create these metamaterials. So here we have this laminate example. Here was very important that what the material parameters were, but the metamaterials, the geometry somehow dominates. So instead of explaining the Ehlersmannic metamaterials, let's look just mechanical metamaterials that are easier for intuition. First, there's concept of Poisson ratio. It is that basically this is related to the conservation of the volume. If you take this kind of green block of the this cube, and then you stretch it, if the volume stays the same, when you stretch the object to be this red one, then the thickness of this block becomes smaller. And the ratio is when you stretch the object, how much this area of cross-section changes, this is called the Poisson ratio. Usual materials have positive Poisson ratio, so they behave like this. Now one can create extraordinary materials. One can create materials where the basic building blocks are this type of like links. This is Milton's metamaterial. If these are solid like links, you are really like building like mechanos. Now when you are sketching this type of object, these pieces here, they go further from the center line. So if the material would contain this kind of components, when you are sketching it, its volume grows. So here is the example of this type of link system, how it behaves when you are sketching it. It opens up. There are much, much more air here, basically, you would say in this way. So if this is a material with negative Poisson ratio, it's somehow strange. Like here, they have built up this type of foam. When you are stretching it, it somehow behaves in an intuitive way. The volume grows. And many usable materials like paper, for instance, if you somehow do microscopic experiments, paper. No, it's a volume, it's really like the volume also grows. Like in this picture, the area has somehow grown. But also the thing is that it comes somehow, it grows to all directions. When you start to stretch it, it somehow, all directions somehow get magnified. Paper and many polymers, for instance, like Gore-Tex materials that we have in our clothes, they have this type of structure and behave in this way. And also geometrically, I think it would be very interesting to understand more the theory of this type of materials. Then the other type of materials, this is negative mass material, working with one frequency. So how it is done? You have some solid structure called matrix, and you put their holes. In the holes you put some compressive material like rubber, and then some very massive balls, for instance, from lead. And now this works in the way that when you start to somehow put this, you start to like, this is not somehow so, So when you start to oscillate this material, sometimes oscillation is such that when you are moving the material to left, actually these dead points that lead balls are going to the opposite direction. That's because they have like, if you would have this kind of rubber stick and you would somehow start to do like this, and sometimes there's this inertia coming from the, there's like a delay how this, there's like delay how this ball is moving. So often the ball is moving with the right frequency, the ball is moving to a different direction where you're pushing this whole material. So it has like the mass is moving to different direction where you are having putting the force. So this means that actually the equations, acoustic equations, the mass of this type of structure is negative. Let's then go to electromagnetism. In electromagnetism, the basic building blocks are this type of copper, for instance, kind of conducting wires. So let's look one wire, like this, and think that you put magnetic field to go through it. So we put magnetic field, this is the notations now is that this is like if you would have a dart and you are throwing it, this cross means that the magnetic field is going from out to inside. So when magnetic field goes in, this is almost like a closed wire loop. So basic physical law says that when the magnetic field goes through a loop, here's a current that is induced. Now this is, there's a slit here. This is actually called the Penryl-Veselago slit ring resonator. Like this. So the current cannot go through. So what happens? Positive charges will accumulate here, negative charges will accumulate here. Now I think that this magnetic field is time harmonic, so it's fluctuating like a sine function. So when the magnetic field vanishes a little bit later, the current vanishes, but the currents stay here. Now these currents have start to charges are here, so charges want to balance, so they cause a current that has just opposite direction than the previous current had. And now you think again that this current causes magnetic field, so now we have magnetic field that comes out to the different direction. So engineers think that this is sometimes this is like a coil, sometimes as a capacitor. And now if we again have this kind of sinusoidal time harmonic magnetic field that is going here, then this magnetic field that is produced that comes to different direction, it may have the same, it comes, so this causes that the magnetic field comes to the opposite direction through this after some delay. If the frequency is just right of the incoming wave, this is amplifying the time harmonic wave at the, where the structure is. So this actually causes that here we have some negative material parameters. The material is not somehow trying to dampen the waves, but it is somehow like increasing them. So this is called like, now these kind of things are called materials with negative refractive index, if they are planned correctly. So one takes this type of resonators, puts them to this type of like, one takes like, makes do homogenization. One takes this kind of huge number of elements and put them to this type of like periodic structure. And waves behave here in this way, with like this that wave is somehow when it hits to the body, then the refraction is the opposite direction than usual. So here is the usual, this red one is the usual refraction, negative refraction, the wave is rays behave in this way. Okay, so this is the idealized case what would happen. So, from the mathematical point of view, actually the study of this kind of materials have just started. The best results at that moment are regular results which explain why materials that have constant permittivity 1, why they cause, why there appears where there appears, so usually in optics there are no magnetism. So mu is constant, the permeability is constant. But using this type of resonators that behave in this way, there might appear magnetic reactions, even though there's no magnetism in the material. So the idea will be here that we have electromagnetic parameters like permeability, mu and permittivity may become negative. Yes, here I is the complex unit. These usually are matrix values, but you can let's think that we have to consider now just isotropic media. And this actually somehow leads, I think, to quite interesting mathematical problems, because so how you could think it. Let's think that here is complex plane, so here is R times I times R, here is real axis. Usually parameters like, I think that like this kind of like, usually like epsilon, the parameter permittivity, epsilon, and mu, they are real valued. Then you add some losses in this media. So then actually you have real valued, you have perturbation of real valued material parameter, you add there like some complex part. So you turn a little bit material parameters in the complex space. Then you turn both epsilon and mu very close to my negative values. And now the refractive index, that is usually the same as wave speed squared, in some sense, as the phase speed squared, it's a product of epsilon and mu. So actually this n here, when you multiply this, it has rotated so that n will be somehow very close to the real axis. So actually, from the point of view of geometry, one could start to study this type of complex values, value Riemannian metrics, and what happens here. But no rigorous results are actually you also assume that now that this mu is complex, so mu is mu r plus I mu I. Yes, mu I is negative, and you make these losses to go close to zero. Actually, all mathematical problems appear when you finally push these to the negative values. There are so-called anomalous resonance that happens in these structures. And this type of materials really appear in nature. For instance, if you go to optical frequencies, then silver and gold are such that the real part of permittivity are negative. Then it is like almost like there is mu is actually a usual material in optical frequencies is one, but this epsilon is in this direction.
Yeah, but n is not.
That's true. Yes, n is that's true. Yes, yes. Then actually, this becomes the Riemannian metric becomes like negative in some sense. But then, well, this is there are lots of somehow open questions. The mathematical theory is totally undeveloped on this area. So here is somehow, let me somehow show what the simulations now somehow and laboratory experiments show. So this is the way how physicists think that, so this is the ideal building block. It is considered that it's almost like, it's a combination of a coil type of structure and capacitor. And then you somehow build it from silver, you use this little bit like U type of materials. So now you somehow like was in this example, you somehow make a periodic structure with this type of elements. So here is a, they look the direction that how the loop, how this these resonators are located. So here are like experiments, how the effective epsilon and mu behave. They might have some negative values. Actually, these are only the real parts, so there might be also complex values. So this is very anisotropic material, and there appears negative negative like epsilon or mu. One has to actually wonder, they speak about this, that the material has, these metamaterials have permittivity and permeability. But actually one has to be careful, because if you take like this kind of like cube of this type of material with effective permittivity and permeability, it seems that if they remove a piece of it, the permittivity and permeability might may change. And let me go back to this resonator picture here, where we so I explained this was somehow, there was a certain time delay. It means that this works well with one frequency. It's the idea is that this kind of structure is almost resonating. And it's very hard to build up materials that have extremely small components that resonate. Actually, the theory comes, the resonances come from the fact that you change this geometry a little bit so that you somehow, this gap is made smaller and smaller, and the conductivity of the structure is increased and increased. And now there are some homogeneous results for this direction, but the rigorous homogenization theory is not yet developed. An engineer said to me that all mathematical homogenization theory is totally useless, because there typically if you have like positive parameters, then you homogenize, the results are positive. But in that comes change of geometry, and also that you have materials have different scales that behave just correctly, one somehow could try to explain this negative values of the material parameters. Okay, so here is a picture what type of these metamaterials are. This is working close to visible light. So this schematic picture of all kind of materials. So here is like permittivity epsilon, permeability mu. Now only look real parts, so these are both real now. Ordinary materials are such that the relative epsilon, so in vacuum I have normalized that these are values once. So ordinary materials are here. Then if epsilon is negative, it actually means that you have lots of free charge carriers, like electrons. For and that's why silver and gold are optical frequencies here, because there are lots of free electrons. Then there's magnetic plasma. It's not clear if this type of structures exist in nature. Maybe there are some structures that approximate that kind of thing. And then there's these exotic materials, these metamaterials with negative epsilon and mu, the negative refractive index materials. And then now I'm going to speak about invisibility cloaking, and there we use materials that are between the ordinary materials and the negative refractive index materials. So why actually one wants to use these kind of things? One application is to go through the resolution limit, so this Abbe's resolution limit. His thumb stone. So if you have a like a lens, and then you have you want to focus this light to a point so that one sees this point sees this device with the lens in angle alpha, then the lens can focus light essentially to dot of size d, where d is given this form. And this also means that in the opposite way, that if you have objects that are have a smaller distance than d, they appear the same in picture. So this is the, like the n is the refractive index in this medium. And there are lots of attempts to go make like lenses that go beyond this resolution limit. Abbe actually was one of these founders of Zeiss company. So now this negative index of materials, you could think that they correspond to diffeomorphism that folds the space, like in this picture. So this is actually the interpretation of Leonhard and Philbin, this type of folding of the space. You have a diffeomorphism in one dimension, it would look like this. And if one has here like point source, then light would have negative refraction, the rays would behave in this way, and they will focus again here. So this would be this is so-called Pendry Veselago lens, that is lens that would somehow have no optical axis and would focus, at least they would focus light rays perfectly. Now there are all kinds of problems. First, the metamaterials are often, they have some loss. And the second problem is that if one looks not only the rays, but looks the wave equation, then the focusing doesn't seem perfectly to happen due to evanescent waves in this medium. Due to evanescent waves. We have like waves that are exponentially decaying. But also the mathematical theory of this kind of diffeomorphism that folds the space, it has not yet been developed. So that would be like excellent somehow direction for young people wanting to combine this type of study and Riemannian geometry. So there actually are lots of debate. Could one do something like this? And there are all kind of suggestions how to make so-called Poorman lenses that work a little bit like this, but not perfectly like this. Okay, let me now I have described this kind of metamaterials, and the moral of this whole story was that we can build up exotic materials that work in exotic way with single frequency. Okay, let me continue just a few minutes more before break. So let me recall the inverse conductivity problem for this elliptic equation, where here we have matrix values, conductivity sigma, and we can consider that the measurement data is actually the all possible Dirichlet and Neumann pairs satisfying where u satisfies this equation. So here it would be a like laboratory tank, here is a computational simulation. One puts here some metal plates, electrodes, having some voltages, and measures the currents. Or makes an opposite way. Anyway, you can think that this is a graph of Dirichlet to Neumann operator, but this is consist of all possible measurements that pairs that can be done on the boundary. So there is long history on this problem, as we have heard. Calderon formulated the linearized problem. Three-dimensional problem was studied somehow for smooth conductivity. This was first solved by Silverstein and Ullman, and Nahman gave a constructive algorithm how to solve this constructively in three and higher dimensions. Nahman solved the problem in two-dimensional case for smooth conductivities based on this, that there is actually quite good numerical algorithm producing this type of images. Then in 2006, for conductivities are both bounded from above and below like this, Astell and Päivärinta solved this for isotropic conductivities, and for anisotropic conductivities, actually Sylvester results combined with this Nachmann result, and then our work with Aslan and Päivärinta with non-smooth conductivities, so that one can, if one have conductivities that satisfy this type of condition, that they are bounded from above and below, then one can construct the conductivity up to eritheomorphs. So for making counterexamples, one has to break these conditions. First question is that, could you still somehow, if you break these, remove these conditions, could you still get positive results that you can reconstruct the conductivity up to eritheomorphs? And answer is yes. With Askel and Päivärinta, we recently proved this type of result that yes, we have very weak singularities. So if you have here, this is formulated for isotropic conductivity, so scalar valued conductivities. If this integral is finite, so the conductivity can go to zero or infinity, and if the boundary measurements are the same, then the conductivities are same. And this can be also considered a kind of like classical electromagnetism tunneling effect, in the sense that here we have like in plane, this is a two-dimensional case, so this is only in plane. We have here some conductivity, in this type of domain where the conductivity goes to zero, so there's in some sense isolation on this curve here. Still, the currents go in, and you can see what is inside, deconstructed, doing measurements outside here. Okay, and now, so basically this transformation optics principle that I explained, this causes already some kind of like counterexample for like physical imaging of conductivity, namely, you can always change the coordinates, and we obtain conductivities that we give the same boundary measurements. So from boundary we cannot see if we have like this type of body or some other type of body. If you would have here some obstacle, it would be somehow, the location would be somehow moved. So we cannot exactly say where things are, we just see a different image what is inside. Next I will speak about invisibility cloaking, where we want to take some arbitrary body, put their exotic material around it, so that this whole body would look the same as homogeneous material. But let's have now 5 minutes break and continue after it. Thank you.